We are Two Guys Gaming. As always, even though the intro says Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Hello and welcome. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and whether you're meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. This is a series where I read and respond to either a fantasy book or a science fiction book over a couple of weeks. It's been about a month again since my last update, but I'm officially out of school, so I should be able to update regularly this month and next month, and then the beginning of August. I will either try to record some ahead of time and set it up to release, or I will just skip those 2 weeks and read something and take some notes for when I get back from the United Kingdom, because we're going to the United Kingdom for a trip. In this series, I will be reading and responding to The Dragon Republic, Book 2 from the Poppy series by R.F. Kuang. If you don't remember what happened in the first book, you can go back and listen to my entire series earlier in Noob's Book Club and catch up before you listen to this one. Or you can get a recap from somebody else. I think I'm going to do things a little bit differently. I set it up a little bit differently because, as with the Poppy War, I found that Super Summary has a summary of the book, so I will read from that, and then I'll give my thoughts about each chapter after, and then at the end I might wrap it up with some just general thoughts about going forward. So there's not going to be as structured as it has been in the past with the different sections. It'll just be each chapter and me responding to that particular chapter. In this episode, I will go through the prologue and chapter 1 through chapter 5. There's a content warning. This section discusses genocide, wartime violence, racism and scientific racism, colorism, rape, sexual assault, self-harm, physical abuse, and substance use disorder. Yeah, so this book is a bit dark, just like the first one is, but I have a feeling it's going to get even darker. Just a warning. Prologue. Arlong, 8 years prior. 8 years before the action of the main story, a young Yin Nija, who is Vaisra's son and Rin's classmate at Synagard, and a six-year-old brother, Ming Zha, are waiting in a grotto near their home city, Arlong, though they're forbidden from being there. They are both magically sucked underwater. Nija hears Ming Zha screaming. When he surfaces, the grotto is shallow again, and Ming Zha is gone. A mysterious voice greets Nija. As they're exploring, they talk about monsters, but they also talk about a great treasure. Nija talks about the responsibility for his younger brother. Just outside of the entrance, they see their father's cloak. I believe that it's the something trying to lure them in. Nija feels dread, but Ming Zha gets closer. Water ends up being deeper than it looked, as they said. The voice that he hears gave him chills. And I think this is a nice introduction into Nija's background, which will come up later in the book, obviously. But it was a cool introduction because it sucks you in, and at the same time it gives you that little bit of background on the character. Part 1, Chapter 1. After Fong Runin, called Rin, destroyed the Federation of Mugen and its people with her powers, she and her squad of shamanic assassins, the Sike, became wanted by Empress Su Daji. They have been in the employ of the Pirate Queen Moog ever since, who agreed to help them assassinate Daji if they assassinate 30 targets for her. Their final target is in a port city that was ruined by the Third Poppy War between the Federation and Nikan. They expected the city to be deserted, but there's a large festival and parade. Rin is going through opium withdrawal. She began smoking due to her grief after the genocide she perpetrated on Mugen, but the Phoenix, the god associated with her power, fills her mind with memories of the genocide of her people, the Spearly, to fuel her rage. The Phoenix gives her hallucinations that the people around her are Muganese, tempting her to kill again. However, she is shocked out of her rage when she sees Daji. In my notes, I put clear mind? I'm not sure what that was about. I think Rin said something about having a clear mind, but she's either under the influence or suffering for that next hit. They end up being mercenaries. It's actually for the heroin trade. I know it talks about assassinations there, but Moig is a huge heroin dealer, grower, whatever you want to call it. Their end game, her end game is Daji, and it's already pretty clear that she will do almost anything and sell almost anybody out in order to get there. She takes the heroine to forget. The Phoenix wants to remember. It's this internal conflict between her and the Phoenix and the heroine withdrawals that are driving her and her rage. Obviously, learning about the Spearly and how the Spearly were murdered too fuels her in her rage. Because of the parade, they are hesitant to go after Daji because they don't want to take out civilians. There's some tension between Chagan and Rin. What's his name? Altan. Altan put Rin in charge. Chagan doesn't necessarily think he should be in charge, but he definitely thinks that Rin shouldn't be in charge. And he has a point, like even besides the opium. She is in no shape to lead a group of assassins on any kind of mission, let alone a mission against the Empress. Chapter 2. Rin wants to attack Daji, but one of the Sike, Yenegin, holds her back. Daji makes eye contact with Rin. Fireworks go off behind Rin, giving her war flashbacks. The Phoenix overtakes her mind, and she cannot tell their desires apart. She begins to burn Yenegin alive, stopping only when her second-in-command, Chagan, puts a laudanum-covered cloth over her mouth. As with every time they sedate her, she imagines her war crimes with the detachment of a god, bouncing between that and overwhelming guilt. So, as I said, Rin is willing to give up everything, give up nearly everyone to go after Daji, and when she sees Daji, the Phoenix goads her into going to attack. The fireworks go off, which trigger her PTSD, adding even more sort of complexity and chaos to her personality. She nearly kills Yenegin, as it says. Chagan knocks her out. They notify the militia. And then at the end here, I just put, Rin is fucking losing it. She has no business being in charge of anything or anybody, let alone these assassins. And hopefully at some point, she realizes this and gets her shit together. Chapter 3. Rin wakes up several days later on the Sika's ship. Yenegin and their healer, Enki, have left the Sika's rank. Chagan scolds Rin for endangering them and for turning to opium to fix her problems. They bicker over command of the Sike, but Chagan respects their late leader Altan Tregson's wishes that Rin be commander. Rin finds the Sike members Suni, Baji, and Ramsa. Suni successfully assassinated their target in the confusion Rin caused. Rin tries to apologize, but they stop her and comfort her, saying that resisting the impulse of their gods does get easier. That night, Rin sees a vision of Altan telling her that she should have died instead of him. She can't control her power, so she stabs herself, using pain to stop her power from overtaking her. She then smokes opium, which dulls her pain. This time I wrote Rin is a spoiled little brat in addition to losing her shit. Chagan is the only one who's willing to stand up to her. I feel like the others are enablers. I mean, yeah, she's trying to fight against the god, but she gave in to the god's power initially, even though she was warned against it, and she is singularly focused in everything that she does. And before it was trying to kill off an entire population of people. And again, I guess it's not so cut and dry, you know, like war is messy, as we're finding out with things happening in real life. And, you know, who's right, who's wrong. The Spearly were killed, which, you know, would cause anybody to be upset and attempt to go after them. I mean, who knows, you know, if you were given the power of a god, how would you use it against your quote-unquote enemies? I can't say that I wouldn't. You know, you get in that mode and you make dumb decisions sometimes, and it just comes down to that. So while I'm here judging Rin, at the same time, I can't say that I wouldn't do the same if I was in her situation, which I think is what makes the book so compelling, is that you ask yourself, standing up on your high horse in your ivory tower, it's easy to say that this person is wrong, but trying to put yourself in their situation and realize the pain and suffering that was caused and how you might react to something like that. It's a sticky situation, and I wish that we didn't have to deal with this kind of crap, but we do. Chapter 4. The Sikhe arrive at Moog's pirate city, Ankalun. Rin hates the city because of how easily she can get opium here. She meets with Moog alone and reports the killing of the target. However, Moog won't give Rin the money and supplies she needs to chase Daji. She says Rin must first kill a ship captain for an opium skimmer in her employ who has been embezzling her. Rin agrees, and she asks Moog for her friend Chin Kite's address. Moog has him under house arrest, calculating taxes for her crime ring. Kite asks Moog not to tell Rin his address, but when Rin shows up at his house, he allows her to enter. Since surviving the massacre at Golanese, Rin notices that his eyes are quote-unquote dull and blank. Kite, who is from a noble family in Sinigard, Nikon's capital, doesn't believe that Daji invited the Federation into Nikon, started the newest poppy war, sold the Sikhe into scientific experimentation, and enabled the massacre at Golanese. These are all details Rin heard from Shiro, the Muganese scientist who experimented on her. Rin notices burn scars up and down Kite's arm. He admits he burns himself to try and understand how the Muganese felt before Rin incinerated them. In the city, there's these ladies called Lilies. Rin hates them. She bullies them. I put this quote down again in the light of what's happening in the real world. Revolution is fine in theory, but nobody wants to die. Moog is playing Rin, no doubt, using the opium over her head. And it's all, like, this whole thing is being driven in the background by opium and the opium trade. And Kite, I wrote, is in a bad way. Obviously, they told you at the end there what he's going through and how he's dealing with his PTSD. He seems to have internalized it, whereas Rin is externalizing it and, as usual, putting it out on others instead of looking inward and seeing perhaps how she can control herself and the Phoenix to maybe a better end. Chapter 5. The Sikhe sail to the next assassination target. They see an unmarked ship heading towards them. They are suspicious, and Rin orders Ramsa, their munitions expert, to fire on the warship. The warship fires ink into the water, blinding Aracha, who powers the Sikhe ship with his water shaman powers. The warship then releases opium smoke on board, knocking the Sikhe out. When Rin wakes, she and her team are tied up below decks. Out of a small hole, she sees a Hesperia-made warship. The general of the new ship boards and goes below deck to the Sikhe. He is angry when he sees that they have been restrained so harshly. Rin recognizes him as Yanisha, her old schoolmate, rival, and briefly friend. Rin is confused, as she thought Yanisha died during the events of the Poppy War. I just wrote, infighting, probably between the Sikhe. I just can't sympathize with Rin. I mean, I guess it sounded like I was earlier. I'm trying to understand Rin, but I just can't sympathize with her. Like, every time I want to give her the benefit of the doubt, she just goes off and either feels sorry for herself, or takes it out on somebody else, or, you know, it's just, she's not a good person. And I know that you can have unlikable protagonists, and that's what we have here, is an unlikable protagonist. Hopefully she figures it out, but I have a feeling she won't. Seems to be the sort of prevailing theme of these books, is that she's just not going to figure it out. It was kind of surprising, obviously, that Nisha came back, because I thought he died too. Not sure what his game is going to end up being, how he's going to fit into things. He kind of kept Rin in check when they were in school, so maybe he'll serve that purpose here as well. I don't know. I guess we'll find out in the next chapters. So overall, this is an engaging start to the book. I'm hooked already. I want to see what happens. I do want to see if Rin figures it out, even though I fear that she won't. Bringing Nisha back here is kind of a cool little touch, because, like I said, he may be able to hold her in check somewhat. Oh, I also like to see how Chagan evolves throughout the story, and if he's willing to continue to be by her side. It seems like he believes in loyalty over everything else, so he'll probably stick around in spite of the fact that he shouldn't, because it's not good for him. And it might be good for Rin. It's definitely good for the rest of the team. So I think he will stick around out of loyalty to them, and maybe even some loyalty that Rin is going to figure it out. You know, maybe he has the same thoughts that I do. We'll find out going forward. I mean, there's some really deep stuff in this book. That's the other reason that I like it, is that the Dragonlance books, there was some stuff in there, like, you know, obviously metaphor, but it was still very light and airy. This is deep, and it gets deep, and it talks about PTSD, and it talks about war and how war can turn people inhuman, both in their actions and in how they view each other. It talks about, you know, punishing yourself for things that others have done, like with Kate there. And it's a dark book, but we'll help each other through it. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. I've been doing about an article a week. I'm also fairly active on TikTok, NoobDads76. And I've been uploading about a video a week on YouTube, NoobDad131. I will be back with this series in a couple of days. I've already written down the notes for episode 2. And hopefully I can get this done by the end of June, beginning of July. And then I think I have another book, Dragonfall, that I saw in Barnes & Noble last year that I wanted to pick up. And things just kept getting pushed back. So I'll do that next month. And if we have time, maybe we'll finally do the movie Versus for Jurassic Park. Talk to you soon. Bye, guys.